So again, going to Genesis chapter 40. And Zach had went over the first couple verses of this chapter last week, but we're going to start back at verse 1 and kind of work our way back through it. And we're kind of seeing the story of the butler and the baker here that gets sent to prison, where we saw Joseph is also being held. So Genesis chapter 40, picking up at verse 1, says, "And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt," that'd be Pharaoh, "and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt." So the phrase there in that verse, "after these things," it shows us that some time has passed since back in chapter 39 and chapter 38. So we've moved forward a little bit. But it's not specific. It doesn't give us an actual timeline here. But we can put together a couple pieces of information to figure out the timeline here to know where we're at. So we know that 2 years pass before Joseph will interpret Pharaoh's dream in chapter 41, verse 1, when we get there next week. So I've got it here on the sides. This is chapter 41, verse 1. "And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river." So we know that 2 years passes before we get there. So from where we're starting at in chapter 40 to 41 is going to be a 2-year period. And then in chapter 41, verse 46, it says, "And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt." So we know that he roughly would have been about 28 years old in what we're going to see today. Okay, so he's 28 when he enters prison, and he served Potiphar for around 11 years. So that kind of gives us a timeline of how long he's been here and when this happened. So he's 28 at what we're looking at today. Now, the butler that it's going to talk about here would have been also the cupbearer, right? But he's not just the cupbearer. He's going to be the person that would have been in charge of all of the vineyards and wine cellars for the Pharaoh, right? He probably has hundreds of people that answer to him. He's a leader. He's a boss, right? Now, the baker also would be in a similar position. He's the head chef. He's the person in charge of everything that relates to providing and preparing the royal meals. So both of these people are very important ranks. They're very high ranks. And due to their access to royalty and confidential matters, think about it, a lot of times they'd be having meetings while they're having meals or drinking wine. So they're hearing confidential things. These offices were normally held by high-ranking people from noble families or even princes from Pharaoh's own family. So it'd be people that are very well known to Pharaoh, people he would trust, people he knows outside of just their rank as the butler and the baker. So Genesis chapter 40, verse 2. "And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers, and against the chief of the bakers. So think about how disappointing this has got to be for Pharaoh. These are two people that he trusts because of his relationship with them before they're in these positions. And then it's people he trusts with preparing his food and drink. Now think about what goes on during those times. If someone was trying to take out a leader like a king or a pharaoh, 9 times out of 10, the easiest way to do it without going into a full-fledged war would have been poisoning someone. Who better could poison someone than the people that are given access to their food and drinks, right? So these are people that he trusted very highly. He had a lot of, held them in high esteem. And whatever they've done something to push him to the point of anger that he's going to send them to prison. So think about people that you trust that could kill you. And you're in a leadership role where a lot of people may want to take you out, and they've done something to anger you to this point. So it had to be something pretty serious. Verse 3, "And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound." Now the captain of the guard is Potiphar. That's the person that Joseph was serving in his house. So as I talked about last week, that's how we know that they end up in the same prison where Joseph sat. Verse 4, "And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward." Now, season means some group of days. Could be a couple months, probably a year, judging by the fact that a lot of times they would have judgment on the anniversary of when someone had went into prison during this time. And their judgment is going to be called on the king's birthday. So that's probably the anniversary of whatever they've done. So whatever they've done to anger the Pharaoh probably happened around his birthday on the year prior. Now, the captain of the guard here is Potiphar himself. And think about what it says here. He puts Joseph in charge over two of the highest ranking officials in Pharaoh's house. Now, Zach kind of touched on this. Potiphar was put in a lose-lose situation. He had to decide if he was going to believe his wife or if he was going to believe his servant Joseph, who he had a lot of trust in. The fact that we see him putting Joseph in charge over this prison, and now he's in charge over two highly elected officials here, he probably knows his wife was the one in the wrong. But like Zach touched on, it was a lose-lose. He's not going to go against his wife in public. So he's still keeping Joseph in prison, even though it probably shows he believed Joseph was the one in the right. Verse 5. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, that's the butler and the baker, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in prison. Now, dreamed a dream, that phrase there in Hebrew, is used to show that the dream was thought to be significant. It's important. Now, in the ancient Near East, in their culture, dreams were considered a common mode of communication from the divine. And we see that all through the Bible. God uses dreams as a form of communication all through the Bible. So they were onto something there and thinking that it was important and was a divine message. Verse 6. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. Now think about this. They're in prison, right? Wouldn't they kind of seem sad every day? So look at verse 7. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? So they're in prison. They'd be sad every day. But Joseph is sympathetic. He knows something is different about this day. They're more sad than they typically were just being every day. And he knows that they're distressed beyond just the circumstances of being in prison, and asks them, what's the cause here? Why are you in despair more today? Verse 8, and they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. So Joseph offers to help the two with understanding their dreams, but he immediately points out that it is only through God that he can do so. This is not me interpreting it. It's God's message, and God will help me in helping you to understand it. So he's giving honor to God immediately, just like we should do in our lives. We all are blessed with different tools that we use in our daily lives, whether it's in our jobs or in our families, and those are blessings from God. That is God working through us and giving us what we need to help those around us. And when we're blessed with a gift, we need to use it to help those around us. Just like God is blessing Joseph with being able to interpret the dreams, he doesn't keep it to himself. He interprets for those that need it. And we actually will see this come up again. Joseph will be put in a very similar situation in chapter 41 next week. He's going to be asked to interpret for Pharaoh. So his gift that he's been blessed with, he uses it so naturally and so well that he ends up being elevated to, he's not just interpreting for prisoners anymore, now he's interpreting for Pharaoh himself. And verse 9, and the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me. 10, and in the vine were three branches, and it was though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And in verse 11, and Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Now, if we go back and study the Egyptian culture, what this is describing is a religious ceremony that they had that was connected with the worship of Horus. And they have a lot of paintings and hieroglyphics that show this. So they would have the cup where it has honey or some other liquid in it, and then they would take the grapes and actually mash it into the cup to make the liquid that the Pharaoh would drink. So our mind automatically goes to a cupbearer and grapes, and he's drinking wine, but this has not been fermented. It is being made right then before it's presented to him. So it's not a fermented drink like wine. Verse 12, and Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Verse 13, yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head. I want you to look very closely at that phrase, because he only says part here. And in the next dream, he adds something to it that changes the meaning. Here he just says that Pharaoh will lift up thine head, right? And restore thee unto thy place. Thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. Verse 14. But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. So he's saying, you're going to be restored to your office, back to the cupbearer of the Pharaoh. Please remember me when you go and are back with Pharaoh. Verse 15. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. So Joseph is speaking as that messenger for God, interpreting the dream the way that God revealed it to him. and tells the butler, in 3 days, you're going to be restored to all the honor and privileges of your office. And then he asks him for some help and says, hey, when you go back to Pharaoh, talk to him. Try to help me get out of prison as well. Now think about everything we've seen Joseph go through. His brother sold him into slavery. Then he's been put into prison. And at no point up to this verse has anything been said about the way Joseph feels about that. Doesn't talk about him being angry or upset. But at this point, we see Joseph starting to show a little bit of his emotion. He's got some sadness about this. He's starting to have some impatience over the situation. And I kind of took this as, every time we see great people in the Bible, we always get told a little bit of their faults and their flaws as well. And I think that's to help us understand that there's only one divine perfect person, right? It's Christ. So as good as Joseph was, we see a little bit of a fault here. He starts to get a little impatient, just like we've seen his ancestors do, and trying to take things into his own hands. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't have necessarily done this and that he's a terrible person, but he was man, just like us. He had faults and flaws. The only perfect one is Christ. Verse 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I was also in my dream, and behold, I had three white baskets on my head. Okay, so three white baskets on my head, that verse, or that phrase, we've got to break down. There's a couple of different things that we need to understand about it. When it says white baskets, that is not referring to the color of the basket. What it is referring to, a lot of times it will be translated to white bread in baskets. Okay, so he's carrying bread, but if we go back to the Septuagint, which is where they first took the Hebrew, the Old Testament, and translated it to Greek, it's the first time it was ever translated after it was originally written. But it would have been translated around the time that Christ was alive. So they kind of understood what was there and probably understood better than we do. I have a slide here that shows us. This is what it says in the Greek in the Septuagint. It's kanion. It means a basket of reed. So think about a wicker basket, right? It's not like a clay pot. It's a wicker basket. And I know we're all from the South. We probably know what wicker baskets are. But just in case you don't, this is what we think of with a wicker basket, right? They're using reeds, something they use in that area. We see it with Moses. It's something that they had the bulrushes down by the Nile, something they had common to use. This is how they would have made the baskets. Does anyone notice what's the one of the biggest characteristics about a wicker basket? Something that'd be different than a clay pot.
Holes
in it. Exactly. So we're never told exactly what happens with the baker here. But there's some clues that are pointed out to us. Think about, we still have phrases we use today, like someone that works in delivery or in a warehouse. They'll be like, oh, yep, he got such and such, it fell off the back of a truck. He's dreaming that the baskets he's using to bring the food to Pharaoh has holes in it. Okay, we're going to see he's going to be the one that is judged by Pharaoh to have been the one that was in the wrong, whatever happened. The clues start to line up that he was probably skimming off the top. He was stealing. He was allowing people to take things that weren't there. That's kind of what the clues point to. So the reason why it tells us it's a wicker basket is it's symbolic. There was holes in his basket. He was letting things fall away. He wasn't. And remember, he's over hundreds of people. So he's allowing things to happen that as the chief baked meat, he shouldn't have been doing. He should have been watching over this better. So verse 17, and in the uppermost basket, there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. Remember, this is still in his dream. So the way they would do this is they would stack three baskets and have the food in it, and they would carry it on top of their head, and they had detached kitchens. They would cross through courtyards to the dining rooms where they'd be eating. So it was common for birds to steal food out of these baskets. We still see this. We all live in a coastal area. How many times have you seen seagulls stealing stuff from people at the beach? Still happens to this day. So it happened then. And Egypt had a major issue with it because birds were considered sacred to them, so you weren't allowed to destroy them. So they had huge flocks of birds that would gather around the larger cities. So this was a common occurrence. But I think this, again, like the wicker basket, is supposed to be symbolic of he's allowing things to slip through the holes, and he's allowing vultures to come and take from him as well. So whether he was stealing himself or if he was allowing things to happen, he wasn't staying up to the responsibility he should have had. Especially, remember, this would have been someone from a noble family or even a relative of Pharaoh. He should have known better. So verse 18. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are 3 days. 19. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee. Now, do we see the difference in his interpretation here? In the first interpretation, he said, "Will lift up thy head." But here to the baker, he says, "Lift up thy head from off thee." Okay? "And shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off of thee." So again, back at verse 13, we see he just says, "Lift up thy head." Here, he tells him, "He's going to take your head off of you." This is referring to a form of capital punishment they had in Egypt, where they would decapitate the criminal and then take the body and string it up from a tree. And remember, they have all these flocks of birds because they're sacred and they can't destroy them, and let the birds eat the bodies. Because then that's helping keep the birds from stealing all the food. It gives them something to eat. So, you know, Joseph's giving them some pretty bad news. You're going to be decapitated and your body's going to be strung up outside the city and the birds are going to be allowed to eat you. Verse 20. "And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants." So this is taking place just as Joseph has interpreted here. And this is probably Pharaoh bringing them out of prison and saying, "Bring them to me. I'm going to talk to both of them, and I'm going to, you know, give them judgment now." Verse 21. "And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." So he's given his title and position back, just like the dream had foretold. Verse 22. "But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted him." So the baker put to death, just like he was told. So we see whatever has happened, one was judged to be innocent, one was judged to be guilty. And then verse 23. "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." So after everything, after Joseph's request in verse 14, he's forgotten. He remains in prison, and we know that he has confidence in God, and because we know where the story goes, we know something good is on the horizon. But how common is this for us in life? That, you know, we ask for assistance, we need help, we're in a bad place, and we promise, "Hey, when you help me through this, I'm going to take care of you, we'll, you know." But then as soon as we're back in good standing, we're back to being prosperous, we forget about all that, right? We get out of the rough patch, and all those promises we made, we just kind of throw it to the side. "Oh, yeah, I was going to do this thing when things got better. I forgot about it." So don't ever overlook the fact that mankind, humans, man and woman, will let you down. Now, that's not to say it's always intentional. Sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes it's just being forgetful. It's just human nature. We're prone to selfishness, to anger, jealousy, and spite, and all sorts of shortcomings. We don't want to place our faith in man. Our faith needs to remain with God. Man will forget us and leave us in our hardships. But Jesus Christ, he doesn't forget us. He will meet us where we are, and he will always remember. He won't forget